You are listening to the Improv Save My Life podcast, brought to you on Bits, the Boston Improv Talk Station.
All right, welcome to episode 96 of the Improv Save My Life podcast. I'm your host, Tom Boyer. This podcast is brought to you on Bits, the Boston Improv Talk Station. We have two guests today, both improvisers, which makes sense because that's really all we have on the show. We have Rebecca Vigil. What's going on, Rebecca?
Nothing much.
And we have Evan Kaufman.
Hi. Hi, Tom.
How's it going?
Good, man. How are you?
Good. Both Rebecca and Evan are part of Your Love, Our Musical, which is a two-person musical based on one relationship. Is that accurate?
Most of the time, yeah. We've done different things like breakups or birthday parties, but mainly we do like a couple.
Cool. Mm-hmm. I checked it out a couple nights ago at IA, and I thought it was awesome.
Thank you.
You had a really interesting couple, too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they were fascinating.
Rebecca is also in a band called Rebecca Vigil and the Vigilantes, which I think is an awesome name.
Thanks, Tom.
It's an improv band, mm-hmm. play in New York City, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And Evan is a member of Gypsy Danger, which is a team that performs at The Pit in New York. And he's also a member of North Coast, which is a hip-hop improv group?
Yes, correct. Hip-hop improv, Saturday nights, 8 p.m. at the People's Improv Theater.
Nice. So why don't we just kind of go through your backgrounds a little bit. We'll start with you, Rebecca.
That's okay.
Cool. Where are you from originally?
I'm from, I moved a lot, but I say Southern California.
Cool. And how did you find your way up to the East Coast?
I won a lot of money on a game show.
Is this true?
This is true.
What game show?
Don't Forget the Lyrics.
That makes sense. Was Mark McGrath the host at the time?
No, that was when it was degraded to a half-hour show.
Yeah.
But it used to be an hour show with Wayne Brady.
We all missed the halcyon days.
Yeah.
Don't Forget the Lyrics. It was a full hour.
Yeah, totally. So, those were the days of television.
That's right.
Did you... I'm trying to remember this show. So you had like a couple like lifeline type things, right?
Yeah, totally.
Did you use them?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I walked away. I used all of them, and then I walked away, you know, like where you like go like, I'm going to take whatever money I want, and I'm going to go.
What was the song that stumped you?
That I walked away on?
Yeah.
The Boys Are Back in Town by Thin Lizzy.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
See, I know you don't know it because it's Thin Lizzy.
No, it's spelled that way, but it's tin.
Is it?
Pronounced tin?
Uh-huh.
I never heard this before.
Yeah.
What?
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe you.
Yeah, I think so.
No way.
Yeah.
It's spelled thin, but they pronounce it Tin Lizzy.
I think so.
I'm looking this up right now.
I think that's the theme song from
the
48 Hours, the Eddie Murphy movie.
Well, if it is, it's a terrible song.
I love that song. Also, was it the lyrics of that stumped you?
Yeah, that's
even
the show.
75% of the lyrics are in the title of the song.
No, they're not. The verse is a monologue.
That's
the verse
true.
Is a.
Guess who just got back today? Those were not boys. I have much to say.
Yeah,
I still think those boys are great.
They're not singing.
Tin Lizzy.
So you made a killing off. Don't Forget the Lyrics.
I did.
The original version.
Uh-huh.
The high class one.
The high class one.
And you were like, let's blow this pop stand.
I absolutely was. But I didn't get the money for a year and a month.
Taxes must have. That's a long time.
It was a long time.
That's bullshit.
And a terrible year.
Was there a holdup or is that just standard?
It's 4 months after your episode airs. My episode didn't. I shot it in January and it aired in October.
Fair enough.
So. Yeah. Well, no, not fair enough.
So had you been. So you're into music, I take it.
Yes. I've sang my whole life. My dad is a singer. We sang all the time when I was little. I've been singing forever.
And you just absorb music. Because obviously if you made it that far on a show,
yeah.
you know some lyrics.
Yeah, I was like the youngest contestant to get my score that I got on the written test. Because I just consume, and my parents were really young. So I would listen to like the popular top 40 music all throughout my childhood. And I would like fall asleep to the clock, right? The oldie station when I was a kid. And I was a huge consumer of music.
Okay, guys, here we go. The band's name is a play on Tin Lizzy, Thin being pronounced tin in an Irish accent.
Crazy.
Tin Lizzy is either a reference to a character from the Dandy comic or a nickname for the Model T Ford.
Yeah. Yeah. So
Tin Lizzy.
Yeah. When you lose a lot of money,
yeah,
you know everything about that thing.
I always assumed it was Thin Lizzy myself.
Sorry, guys.
Well, we learned something new.
Do you guys remember?
They're not skinny, they're aluminum.
There was an older show called Name That Tune, which
did absolutely. It's basically the same kind of
deal. I never understood how people got that, because first of all, they had like a piano player. It wasn't even the original recordings.
Right.
And then it was just like, I can name that song in three notes. It's like, boom, boom, boom. It's like,
yeah, I can do that.
Hail to the Chief. Like, what? How did you know that?
Yeah, before a certain time period, like the internet and stuff and like streaming and all that stuff has changed that ability, because there's so much music,
right,
and there's so many people making their own independent music. It's probably nearly impossible to be that person anymore.
Yeah.
But when there were like a few radio stations and there was top 40, there are songs that I can hear just the first three notes and know what song it is.
Yeah. I'm pretty good about being able to identify songs, but these were like old jazz standards, which they all kind of sounded the same too, you
right.
know? Like,
yeah.
How the fuck are these guys
doing? You know the band The Ink Spots?
No.
Oh, it's an old, like, 40s doo-wop band, and they have a famous greatest hits album that every song is the same intro. It's all dum-ba-dum-ba-dum-ba-dum.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but they all either I can't, you know, I won't stop to set the world on fire.
Well, that's like
or
a band, Sha-na-na, where it's all
Bowser, I think, was the bass guy.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
No, it was Blouser.
Blouser.
I'm just going to correct our pronunciation.
Every pronunciation. Yeah.
It's actually the bleachhole.
The L is non-existent.
So were you doing comedy in California?
I did, yeah. I started improv really, really young. I was 14. My parents were divorced, and I moved from Florida back to California the summer before my freshman year of high school. And so I didn't have any friends when I started high school. But before I had moved, I had taken an improv comedy sports workshop in my junior high. And I was like, what is this? This is amazing.
So this was in California?
In Florida. And then I moved away, and I was like, oh, I'll never see that again. But there's a very distinct comedy sports logo that has, like, a cartoon ref on it.
Yeah, they have it up here, too.
Yeah. Oh, they do? Great. Yeah. And so, I didn't have any friend. I didn't have anything to do, no clubs, whatever. And I'm walking through the hallway, and I see that ref on the wall. And I, like, ran up to the... It's, like, visceral in my memory. I ran up to the wall, and I was like, what is that? And it said auditions. And I was like, I had one friend, sorry. She only spoke Mandarin. And so I just turned to her and, like, motioned, we gotta go there. And so I went...
You had one Chinese friend?
Yeah, and we just
sat... How did you make a Mandarin friend?
Which she wanted to follow me around. It was very weird. We'd sit and eat lunch and not speak.
Are you still friends with her?
No.
What was her name?
Chelsea, which is like an American
name.
She,
Chinese name.
Yeah, she had an American name she chose. Anyway, so I went to the audition, and I literally remember the line that got everybody to laugh. But I had that one line. It was ABA, you know that game? ABA? It's where there's like two lines of people. They do it in auditions a lot, where it's like initiation, response, closer.
Oh, yeah. I think people just say, like, we're going to do a three-line scene.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You'd say a lot more words. ABA. And then, like, so she did something, like, I got your test results, and I was going like this. She was like, and I got your test results, and it's really serious. And then I started singing In the Garden of Eden by that band. In the Garden of Eden. And then I took out my headphones and was like, what? But in high school... That, like, made everybody's head explode. They thought it was hilarious. They put me on the team. I was the only freshman on the team. And I have not done improv ever since. Because there was, like, this weird thing where comedy sports had, like, people who were leaving to go, like, start long-form theater. So that was that crazy time where it was, like, you know, fuck long-form, whatever. And we were kind our
so Comedy Sports went into the high school.
Yeah, they would come and coach.
Yeah.
And so they would talk about our school. Yeah. They would talk about our school because we had this weird Comedy Sports was so popular at our school. We were kids who were doing improv for like 300 people at lunchtime, like every day. So we were doing, yeah, and we were doing big shows immediately. So we got really good for high school kids. And so we were talked about and whatever, and they started scouting us to start doing Comedy Sports in LA with the pros. And then the other guy that was starting the long form theater scouted us. And that was a lot more fun because it was more punk rock. Like, we've been doing short form in school. So why we're going to do the new stuff that, like, we're in a bar and we're underage and we're doing jokes about rape, you know? Like,
Jesus.
Yeah. No, but it was.
I mean, 101.
No, but, it was, like, a lot more punk rock. And so I was at one point, like, doing, when I was a senior in high school, I was doing, like, 7 shows a week in LA.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was crazy. Awesome. It was really crazy time.
And have you ever taken a hiatus, like a month or anything like that?
No. I mean, sometimes they naturally come in because you like go on vacation and can't do a show and then get sick, but it was never like, I gotta stop.
Do you ever think about taking a break and doing other creative things?
No, I just add the other creative things or do other creative things with improv.
I have heard people have said, like, I stopped doing improv and I only do this now, you know, kind of thing, to just pick up a different skill or to when they hit a wall or a ceiling in improv.
That's kind of like, where I'm at right now. Like, I'm 2 years in, which is not far, and I'm kind of like, I'm thinking, like, next year whether I want to keep doing this or just like make my exit strategy now.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think you can do both.
Yeah, I do both. It's never, I think improv is the constant for me just because that's how I feel the most artistically fulfilled is when it's like happening right now in the moment and not like when I do regular, I've tried to do regular stand up where it's like written and I hone a bit. And I completely understand the craft and the art in that. And it's a great stand-up comedian is just mesmerizing to me. It's not fulfilling for me. To do the same joke and try to hone how it works best is great. And I get it. It's not as fulfilling as the discovery of a joke. Or as connecting and having someone in the audience say something funnier than I could have ever written. That kind of thing is the thing that lights my fire, I think.
I agree. I've tried stand up a couple times and it's fine. And I really have respect for people that can do it well.
Absolutely.
But
it's just not where my heart lies. Yeah.
Well, and there's a different energy. There just is, you know, between an audience watching. It's funny because I know I've kind of done both, and I know plenty of stand-up comedians who have kind of a negative view of improvisation.
Totally.
And I think part of it is because the audience gives improvisers an easier time than they do stand-ups.
Absolutely.
Because stand-ups, audiences have this thing of like, okay, let's hear your best 5 minutes.
Yeah.
The culmination of your entire life in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And improv audiences are kind of like, I can't even believe what these people are saying.
Exactly,
you know.
Yeah. And in New York, I'm the musical guest on stand-up shows with my band, or I'll just bring a beatboxer, and I'll do crowd work that's musical and, like, improvise and stuff.
I do this show called Rhythm and Laughs, and we get, it's a monthly show, we get an acoustic singer-songwriter to play, like, 5 or 6 of their own songs, and then in between each song we do, like, a montage based on
the song.
That's awesome.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's, like, my favorite show to do, just because it combines 2 different art forms. It brings in 2 different audiences.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's another thing that I love about musical improv in particular is that I get to, like, flex both muscles.
Only thing is we do a ton of breakup scenes.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, I bet. Yeah.
That's hilarious. Here's another one about a girl I met in a bar.
That's hilarious.
Oh,
yeah.
Doesn't anyone have a scene about a football coach?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, so I've been doing it a long time.
Nice. So you were out in L.A., and then
you won money on.
I won money on a game show.
And then you moved up to New York?
I moved to New York, yeah. I packed three military duffel bags and moved to New York.
Were you a military kid?
Or no, that's how I fit a lot of my crap. They had to be gigantic, yeah.
You drove?
No, I flew me and my two friends out.
Not the Asian friend.
No, not the Asian friend. She was long, kicked Chelsea to the curb.
Are your friends still living in New York?
No, those friends just helped me move.
Oh.
Yeah.
And you two are coming with me.
Yeah, no, they had to check. They had to take each bag and check it. Because it was like the size of a human, you know,
so
the giant military bag.
Did you study out in New York, or did you just get full?
Yeah, I took one class at UCB, and it wasn't my thing. And then I went to the Pit when it was just getting its feet in, like, this tiny... Now it's a new theater called The Loft, but it was where the Pit's main location was, and it's just, like, this dinky theater above a sushi restaurant. And
for
and
those
that,
who don't know the acronyms, the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater is the UCB, and the People's Improv Theater is the Pit.
Right.
In NYC, a.k.a.
New York City.
How many theaters would you say there are in New York?
For improv?
Yeah.
There are three main ones. There's UCB, the Pit, and the Magnet Theater.
Oh, four. Annoyance.
And then, yes, there is not... Yes, the Annoyance moved from Chicago. They have another... They're still in Chicago, but they have another theater now in New York. And those are kind of the four main ones. And then there are smaller theater groups and troupes who exist with it. Like,
yeah,
you know,
there's an indie scene.
Yeah,
where
Chicago City Limits was also a group. I think they might still be around, but I'm not sure.
I think they are too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so then there are like, or Improv Utopia, which is a school.
That.
I think that's Holly's school.
Oh.
Yeah, but I don't know.
Okay.
But yeah, so there are little things like that kind of that are around. And then there's a ton of New York indie teams, which you can see on like New York, I think NewYorkIndieTeam.com, and anybody can just put up a team on there.
Yeah, and there are shows and bars and basements and restaurants everywhere.
That's kind of happening here now, too.
There's an improv boom a little bit right now, I feel like.
Oh,
yeah.
Big time.
Yeah,
it's the second comedy boom, and I think between Tina Fey and Amy Poehler and the books, I think Bossy Pants is a huge part of that.
Yeah.
Because it just kind of gave people the step-by-step process. And like anything now with the internet, if you have a niche thing that you love, you can find a community of people.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's even, you know, I know on Reddit, there's like a Reddit Boston comedy shows thread, and you can just go through and see all the comedy shows that are going on in Boston. I mean, Boston's always been a great comedy town, and especially a stand-up town. Like in the 80s, there was a ton of stand-ups who came out through here. But now it really does feel like there is a big improv boom here.
Yeah. Which is exciting for something that you've loved for so long to finally... You know,
And all over the country, you know, now kind of going and doing festivals and stuff, you see like there's like the New Movement Theater in Austin, and they actually have another theater in New Orleans, and there's just Sarasota now in Florida. A guy who used to work up here in Boston opened, or kind of he's the artistic director.
Yeah, Will.
Yeah,
he
Will.
Was on yesterday.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Good old Will O'Wara. Yeah. So Will works down there, and I know there's a club up in Maine now, Improv Arcadia. I mean, it's kind of crazy. They're all over.
Yeah, it's great.
Nice.
It's great.
So how long were you in New York? Have you been in New York for?
I've been 6.5 years.
And then, is that your home now, would you say, like, permanent?
Permanent? No.
No.
It's not my forever place. No.
Where's your forever place?
I don't know. I think I'll find it, but it's not there. I need, like, I won't live in Manhattan because it's too much. Like, and I, you know, when you move there, it's, like... I'm going to be a Sex in the City all day or whatever.
Drinking martini.
Yeah,
and
fucking everybody. But I lived in Astoria, which is more like a neighborhood. And just, you know, and the older I get, the more I'm like, I just want to slow down and I want it to be quiet and like,
Florida's
less
probably.
Expensive.
You,
I want to retire tomorrow.
Would you ever consider opening like a theater somewhere?
No. Yeah, I don't have the run a theater gene. Not at all.
That's a business gene that I think some people really have. I find it's always a person who comes from a place where they're like, I'm from Wyoming. I moved to Chicago.
They're going to keep it there.
Yeah.
It's always a person that comes from a
yeah,
place.
Exactly. It's always a human with a heart and a set of lungs. But it's, I find it, all the stories are always like, oh yeah, these two people from Wyoming went to Chicago. They did Second City for 2 years. Then they were like, you know what we should do? Move back to Wyoming and start the Wyoming Improv Theater.
Right.
It's funny because it get like these guys in New Orleans who started the New Movement Theater and in Austin were like, they lived in New York for a couple of years. They took all the classes. They did all the stuff. And then they were like, you know what we could do? We could do this ourselves. I mean, it's basically the story of Improv Asylum, too. Chet and Norm did stuff in Chicago and then basically moved back and were like, we can do this here and
yeah.
then just build a theater.
Yeah. Yeah. If yeah. I don't have that business thing to do that. Nor do I have the desire to like be the big boss.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're kind of more on the performing end of like, I want to show up. I want to do the show and do a great show. I don't really need to know how these people got here or, you know, any of that other stuff.
Am I completely dismissive of everyone?
Yeah.
I'm here to do the show and get the hell out of my way.
Yeah. I'm here to do the show and then go find a nice quiet place.
To die.
Yeah.
No, it's not. It's just, it's, I do want it to be like, I want to come here. Because for me, mixing the business and the other part is the hardest part. That's the hardest part of my career and wanting to do it professionally
yeah.
is mixing the commerce and the art
yeah.
is very hard for me because there's a lot of things that I don't want to be required to do, obviously, that you have to do and sacrifice in order to be able to do it for a living.
Well, some of it's not even you have to do it. Some of it's now I think like, there's so many avenues and there's so many ways to go about it. And you hear the success stories of people and you're like, okay, now I need to do that. But it's not a need to do. Like, I think you're doing a great job with what you, you know, you've kind of had. And a lot of it is just like, you always feel like you're on this treadmill of like, if I just did X, then all my problems would be solved.
And when you're in a place like New York,
yeah,
everyone you know is doing television.
Right.
And,
or doing
something.
That,
yeah.
Yeah. And it's always, you know, there's kind of, there's a great video online. I can't remember who did it, but it's, I think if you just Google, like, how'd you get that? It's also, it's the New York LA problem.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
it's basically just people being like, oh, I saw you, you got an agent. How'd
yeah.
you get that?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And it's usually just like, oh, I did work and I got lucky and that's kind of how that works.
Right, yeah.
Because sadly, there is no.
There's no one way.
Formula, yeah.
Yeah. So that's why I try to just, like, do what is fulfilling to me and do it as much as I can. And also, number one is trying to really cultivate and appreciate the my community. And because, like,
yeah.
that for me is, like, the number one lesson that I've learned growing up. In New York and in the scene and in the roughness and the battle of art and commerce and all of that stuff is I could not be at all what I am or even be like as happy and fulfilled as I am if I didn't have the community of talented people around me
yeah.
for sure.
I can't say enough about improv community. Like I got into improv 2 years ago after I quit drinking. Like
mm-hmm.
that's all I used to do. Like I needed a hobby and
mm-hmm.
I didn't, I just, this is what I took to and the community is just awesome. Like,
yeah.
It's so supportive.
It's, I mean, it's literally based on support. It's
right.
literally supporting each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing also that draws people in that kind of improv versus stand-up debate, because here's the thing, stand-ups also, all stand-ups ever talk about is how all they ever wanted to do was sit in a restaurant somewhere and do bits and
yeah.
have fun.
Absolutely.
So this whole notion that like all stand-ups hate each other is
not
really
true. Well, especially not anymore, because
right.
the rock and roll stand-up is like cocaine and being
right.
alone. It's not so much that anymore. There's a lot very
I
more
mean,
diverse.
It still is, but,
no, but
yeah.
it's a lot more diverse. There's a lot of people that like stand-up is a functional art form for them.
Right. And improv, though, I think the difference is improv, there literally is baked in. You cannot be successful unless you are nice and you agree. Wait, I mean, not even being nice, but you
nice,
need to,
I don't know.
Yeah, but you need to agree.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
And you cannot do it alone. It's like being a professional basketball player. You have to be on a team.
Yeah.
you can't, like, like there's no guy who's like, I'm the free throw champion.
Right, exactly.
And that's all
come
I
to
do.
My game. It's just me shooting hoops.
Yeah, just shooting
yeah, yeah.
free throws.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's, I mean, that's why I was drawn to improv, because I started in the stand-up world and always thought I would be a stand-up when I was younger. And I remember doing improv for the first time being like, oh, this is something I can share and enjoy, and people are like making eye contact with each other. It's not that lonely thing of like going to an open mic, doing your 5 minutes, and then if you're not a socially adventurous person, just being like, okay, time to get on the train, think about why my poop joke didn't work for, you know.
Yeah, and for me it was a manifestation of my, like, it was me, not manifestation's the wrong word, it was me utilizing kind of the difficulty of how I grew up in my art, because I moved a lot. So I was really good at getting amongst a group of people and making, like, I'm in the group and I'm your friend.
You did it just here in these past couple days.
I already went to lunch with people without him.
Who she didn't know, and now they're
and
best
I like
friends.
Am borrowing
yeah.
her sweater and like yeah. yeah yeah.
Well, plus, I mean, basically, you could just boil it down to the reason you are in improv is because you didn't want to have just one Chinese friend.
Exactly. I had it, Chelsea. You hear me?
She's crying. Listening.
No,
yeah.
she doesn't understand me.
Tom's main audience is lonely
it's
Chinese.
It is.
Oh, we gotta get on that, Tom.
Yeah. Evan.
Yes.
No, back to me.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I started coming here around 2 years ago. So the only way I really know you is from when you come back to do
yeah.
shows. But you've done
grace
it
them with your presence
quite often. But I've just been blown away every time I've seen you.
Oh, thanks, Tom.
Honestly, and I'm not blowing smoke up your ass, as far as, like, local improvisers I've seen in person, you are the best, by far, I've seen.
Oh, thank you very much. That's very nice of you to say.
Yeah,
I started working here when I was, like, 18 or 19 at Improv Asylum. I worked where we are right now, in the studio at Improv Asylum. I went to college at Emerson down the way, and I mean, I had always really loved comedy, and I went to Emerson because I loved comedy. Like, I literally read about comedians, and I was like, wow, a lot of comedians went to this one college.
What was your, like, what were you really into when you were a kid? Like,
so when I was, like, it's funny, 14 is such a funny, I feel like that's really when you
totally
become a person.
Yeah.
When I was 14, I remember asking my dad about, and I really, I mean, my dad was really the person who got me into comedy, because he loved comedy and he had great taste and stuff, and he really introduced me to all these people. But when I was 14, I asked my dad, like, what famous people, like, who was famous who had our name? Kaufman, because, you know, it's a pretty popular name. And he talked about George S. Kaufman, and he talked about Charlie Kaufman and Andy Kaufman. So those were, like, the three people, and I became very obsessed with Andy Kaufman as a 14-year-old, which is a very difficult thing to work in socially.
Had Man on the Moon come out yet?
Yes. So Man on the Moon came out probably in 98 or 99 or something, and it just kind of was a perfect blend, because that movie is the movie I have seen more than any other movie. I had the DVD of that movie, and I won a very small television that had a DVD player in it at my prom. Like, after prom, they have, like, the, you know, sometimes, basically, after a prom, they will have a thing in the gym where the people are like, please don't go, like, fuck each other and drink.
Right.
Like, stay here and we'll see what happens.
Right.
And I was like, sure, I'll stay here. And so they had, like, a lottery, and I won this lottery to have this television. So, television in my room, and I watched Man on the Moon. I've probably watched that movie at least 200 times,
wow.
300 times. I would cry at the end every time. It's a very emotional movie. Jim Carrey is insanely good in it. And I just fell in love with Andy Kaufman. And that kind of continued to open up this world for me of stand-up. And I got into Steve Martin and Woody Allen. And then I just kind of devoured stuff. Like, I read all these books. I was a really, truly a comedy nerd in the way that now I think a lot of people are or identify with. You know, now the whole nerd culture is a very, like, big culture. But, like, back in the day, I made my parents buy me a microphone and an amp. And we put it in my garage, and I would go out in the winter and, like, do stand-up in the garage for nobody.
It's like working out.
Yeah, basically, yeah. So I would do that, And then when I was 16, I wanted to do stand-up. So I would have my dad take me into New York, and I would do bringer shows at clubs that, like, still exist, like Stand Up New York, and I did Caroline's once. And for those of you who don't know, a bringer show, basically if you bring 8 people or whatever, they'll let you do 5 minutes, which is the most genius pyramid scheme. Comedy's all pyramid scheme anyway.
All of it.
But that's a great one.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I always did fine. It's funny. I did better when I improvised or did crowd work than I ever did doing my material because,
me too.
You know, I always would be like, I know I'm young up here. You know, buy me a juice box after the show. And people are like, ah, ha, ha, ha. They love that.
Tim Meadows did crowd work on me last night.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was... There was nothing.
That was you?
Yeah.
I was at that show.
Yeah, but he didn't say anything. It was just kind of boring.
Yeah, what did you think of that set last night?
I didn't like it.
Yeah, me either.
I get to...
I don't even think he had a set written. He just kind of talked about stuff.
Yeah, some weird stuff,
Well, that's the hard thing, I think, is...
It's like he didn't know he was going to be doing... He seemed like he didn't know what his role was.
Yeah, it seemed like he had accidentally walked on stage.
Yeah.
It was very weird.
He didn't even do one ladies' man?
No.
To save himself?
No.
Well, I'm proud of him. That shows restraint.
No, again, I told them last night when I showed up after the show, because I met up with him after the show, and I said he ended his set with, okay, guys, I'm going to let you go. I was like, we're not on the phone.
At one point, he's like, do you guys want to go now? You want me to do some more? And I was kind of like,
yeah,
let's
like,
wrap it up.
Yeah, we all were like,
yeah, we're late.
You're not exactly killing it, right?
Yeah, dude.
But that is what's so interesting, again, about this, like he did sketch comedy and he did improv. He's a Second City guy. And that transition from stand-up, it's funny because I've been kind of trying to get back into stand-up a little bit now because I've done improv now for, 10 years or whatever since I was 18. And it's funny, I also had an improv experience when I was in high school, but not a ton. We didn't have anything as structured as that. I think we just did, I knew some improv games and stuff, kind of like
theater games.
Yeah, theater games. So you would do that. But I did stand-up for a long time. When I was younger and I went on after Chris Rock one night, stuff like that. So it was very cool. It was a fun thing to do. And then
Chris Rock opened for you. You could say
that's right. He did. Chris Rock opened for me.
I went out after Daryl Hammond once.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was really depressing. And then I was like, not me.
Yeah. It is weird. I mean, the energy, it's funny because people do give you some time because they're just again, it's that thing of I wouldn't want to follow Chris Rock. Oh, we love this. That's so nice that they let that little white boy. when I moved to college, I got a job at the Improv Asylum as an usher. And I started taking classes. And I just fell in love with it because, again, it was that thing of I have a community. And also I enjoyed the aspect of having a school and having classes because I think so often with comedy – there are no rules. And improv had a set of rules. Stand-up has rules, per se, but they're not... And you can take a stand-up class, but it's still pretty kind of like...
Yeah, it's on you, really.
For those of you who don't know Evan loves rules.
Yeah, I love rules and I love control, which is why I love improv. And I did that, and it became a social place for me again, talking about community. I had a community of people, and I just kind of fell in love with doing improv, and specifically here. I did a lot of stuff here. And I moved a little bit through college and stuff. So I went to LA for a little bit, and I did some stuff out there. I took UCB classes. I took classes at Iowa West. Then when I moved to New York, I took a bunch of classes in New York, too. I've gone through the whole...
You just consume as much as you can.
I try. I mean, it's reached a point now where, again, you only have so much money and you only have so much time. And I think sometimes people use classes and it's an excuse not to do it. It's always interesting to me when people are like, I want to practice a lot. And I'm like, well, you can't. You have to do it in front of an audience.
Yeah.
That's how you get it. But I did all the UCB classes. I've done all their improv classes and sketch classes. I perform at the Pit now, and that was through a friend who got me into an audition, basically. I knew some people. Again, the community just kind of helps you out. And me and Rebecca actually met because of Improv Asylum,
mm-hmm.
in a weird way.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago when I was performing, Kirsten Opstad was on the cast with us. And you grow up with Kirsten, or you just knew her from...
I knew her in high school. I knew her whole family. I'm kind of like a little bit of an honorary member of their family. So I've known her since she was 12.
She's another one that kind of, she was here when I first came here, but she left shortly after, but she's, crazy talented. We're looking at pictures of her over there.
Yes. You can kind of hear the audio back and forth. It's because we're looking around. But yeah, so Kirsten brought Rebecca to see a show, and I mean, you just like saw me and you were just like, huh, okay.
Yeah. I was like, that guy needs more rules. I had the show that Evan and I do now. I had like a version of the show in LA, with another guy, and I moved to New York, and that guy stayed in LA, and like months prior to me coming to Boston to visit, he had emailed me to ask if he could do that show with someone else in LA. I was like, sure. And then I thought, oh, well, then I guess that means I can find someone out here. And I could not find anybody. And then I came and saw the show. And during the show, I was like, that is the guy. God damn it. He lives here. Of course he lives here. And then I went back to New York. And like months, 6 months, maybe a year later, I was a part of this touring show, Broadway's Next Hit Musical, that was an improvised musical. And I walked into a rehearsal, and he was in there. And I was like, huh, hey, oh, I saw you. I saw you in Boston. I have a show. Would you want to? And he didn't know me. And so, like, I had to ask him again, I think, in the pit. And then we got into a room together and did the show once through. I explained the formula, and we did the show once through. And I think we, like, looked at each other, and we were like, hey.
Pretty good.
We got something. Yeah.
It's cool. When you kind of identify somebody that would be like a good partner with you, and just as a, you know, a working relationship.
Yeah.
I do a duo prov with this girl, Laura, called Monotone. And I knew as soon as I met her, I'm like, this, she would, her style would match mine. And I, you know, I can't think of a better partner. Like, so it just works out sometimes.
Yeah, I've traveled a lot doing improv, like all over the world, and I've jumped in with people I've never ever met before. So I think I have a very good idea of a type of improviser by watching them do improv for like a scene or two. I can like assess what kind of improviser they are. And with him, I could just tell that our sensibilities were the same. We had the same amount of like goofy mischief, but also really like liked the rules and formula of improv as well as our base to like tag back. Right, exactly. Like tag back home. But we also really, I would watch him like, based on my like punk rock roots of improv, like I'd watch him like fuck with other players in like a really like loving way. And that shit is my fit. We fuck with each other through the whole show. It's great.
I remember, it was somebody's last night here, and you were doing one of the shows, and I think if it's Richie or Matt, somebody stepped on stage, they were about to say something, you just tagged them out.
Right before it. Yes, my reputation of being a lovable asshole. Well, that's a fun thing, I think, too, with Improv Asylum, is you work with the same people so much, and you get so comfortable, and there is... I mean, it's such a cliche thing, but, like, if you look like you're having fun, the audience will have fun with you, which is another thing that I think is so... I don't enjoy it when I can't see performers also enjoy it. You know, when it's too clinical and when it's not emotional, it's not interesting.
Even
and,
like,
yeah. Sorry. No, go for it.
Like, even, like, the musical the other night, like, even when you were introducing it, both of you were just having fun with the crowd. You know, you talk about the Patriots game, and, you know, it just engages people, and it sets it up so that... You're like, all right, we're going to have fun tonight.
Right. Well, and that's part of it, too, is it's live and it's here and it's now and you want to feel like you're present.
And also, like, not to be all dark about it, but I, like, want to give something with my art. I want to, like, feel like I'm doing something meaningful rather than just, like, feeding my ego with laughter, you know? Like,
right.
I want to... So I'm not going to get up there and have them have a bad time. But my job is to have them be in here for 2 hours being like, thank God I did that. you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We got to start high.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks.
How long were you on the main stage here?
I think 3 years. I'm terrible with the year, the dates and stuff of it. I moved to New York 3 years ago, and I still think it was like last week. I'm like, when I moved to New York, you know, like not so, and it's been a long time. But yeah, I was on the main stage. I think I moved back around 2010 or 2011 or so. And then I worked here for about 3 years. Yeah.
It seems like you always have ties to this place.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Improv Asylum is, I was telling Rebecca, like, Improv Asylum is kind of, like, where I became, like, a human being a little bit. Because, like, you know, when you're 18 or 19, you're still trying to, like, figure out who you are. And I was very young, and I kind
of... Just a pile of muscles and bones.
Yep. A couple of lungs, a heart. It's basically all
from
you need.
From a place.
Yep, all you need to start an improv theater, really. But, you know, I really kind of became, like, a young... I became a young man here, and... you know, there was a lot of growing pains, and there was a lot of stuff I learned just about show business. Norm, who is one of the guys who owns this place, likes to say this thing, which is, like, we give everybody their first job. You know what I mean? There's not somebody who's, like, for the most part, there's not somebody who's, like, worked on a movie, and then they come here.
Right.
You know, this is everybody's first job, so there's a lot of things that you learn about cast dynamics and, like, friendships and how to work with people. And, you know, I really... Every time I go down and I'm on that stage, you feel so comfortable because it's just, I remember, like, my first scene on that stage. I remember eating just piles and piles of shit and being really bad and being, you know, like, obnoxiously bad because I was somebody who loved comedy and wanted to be funny really desperately, which is, some people are just kind of naturally funny, and I've always felt like I'm someone who studied it and picked it apart and really meticulously worked to try and be a funny person.
I just fell into it.
But that's the thing. Some people are just very natural. And I think that, you know, Improv Asylum also gave me my 10,000 hours. Like, I did, this place allowed me to do so many shows in front of a ton of people. And it was, you know, it's the reason that I do it still and do it now and have had any sort of success in New York is because Improv Asylum really kind of paved the way for all that stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you're in North Coast, which I've seen a couple times, and I actually took a intro to hip-hop improv class with you. And I love hip-hop, but I love improv, so anytime those two are matched up, it's a fun show.
Good combo.
Are you a big hip-hop fan? Like, how'd you find yourself getting into that?
So that, I had a friend who was in that group, and I did musical improv with another person who was in it. And one time, this Doug Wittick is this guy, and he one time was just like, can you rap? Do you like to rap? And I always liked hip-hop growing up. I really loved the Beastie Boys and Mos Def, and I kind of, like, really fell into that. And I used to freestyle in high school as, like, a joke, you know, a thing that, like, would, again... how do I make friends? I know what I'll do. I'll do this. And I always kind of enjoyed rhyming. I would write poetry when I was younger. Sorry, that caught in my throat.
Yeah, you vomited your own memory.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty vomitous, I would say. But rhyming was always something I really enjoyed. And so when I moved down to New York, I kind of sat in with them a couple of times. And then they were like, yeah, do you want to join? And it's really interesting. I mean, it's like musical improv, except it's a very specific kind of musical improv. And, yeah, people love it.
Kayla was the other teacher.
Yeah.
She is amazing. Like,
yeah.
Just the beatboxing skills. I guess she just won the beatboxing world
championship. Yeah, so this is Kayla Milady. You can shoot definitely Google because she's got some amazing videos and stuff. She actually plays with Rebecca as well now. And she just won the world championship for, like, beatboxing.
Female beatboxing.
Yeah, for female beatboxing. And she's incredible. She's amazing. She's a great musician and a great artist. And, like, we'll probably not see her soon because she's going to be, like, world famous and touring around.
Yep.
Yeah, I think she was actually on Ice-T's, Ice-T's talk show recently. Dougie Fresh came up to her afterwards and was like, you're amazing. You got to do shows with me. So... It's been nice knowing you, Kayla.
Bye, Kayla.
Yeah, but she's fantastic.
Nice. So where both of you are currently in your improv/comedy careers, like, how do you feel, and, like, ultimately, where do you want to, what do you want your legacy to be, I guess?
Oh, wow, great question. Legacy.
Legacy.
What do you want them to put on your improv tombstone?
No. I think right now where I am is, like, I don't think I've ever been more artistically fulfilled. I think, like, especially with our show, I get a lot of joy out of it. I get a lot of, I feel like the work that I do, I'm proud of in the show. And I'm proud of my partner in the show. And, like, as far as the business side of it, like, holy shit, I hit the jackpot. Because Evan is, like, so fantastic to work with in as far as the business. Because not only is just, like, an amicable partner, but he's also just, he is, as you've heard from his background in comedy, he's just such a hard worker. If he wants to do something, he's going to learn about it. He's going to research it, and then he's going to do it. And
those first two things I really focus on too much.
He loves researching. It's just all the rules. He makes me better being with him in this thing that we're doing, this crazy, crazy thing that we're doing.
I think we're lucky too, because having a 2-person improv show that you're able to bring around makes it more personal. And it is our show, which is really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, you're in improv groups, and they're usually pretty big. And it's just harder to corral a larger group of people to do a festival or to, you know, try and get a paid gig or, you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So for us right now, we have just been trying to take our show and continue to legitimize it and bring it to different places and kind of see what the limits of our show are. You know, recently we did the New York Fringe Festival, which improv groups kind of rarely do. And we sold out all 5 of our shows, and we got a Fringe Encore run, which was really great. Which,
like, one of 18 shows out of the 187 shows,
yeah,
get 5 shows.
So that was really awesome. We have a show right now at the Soho Playhouse. We're doing our 5 shows. So if you're in New York City, your listener to this, come down and see the shows.
Not you, Chelsea.
Not you, Chelsea. But yeah, I mean, I think we are on that precipice of trying to find the balance between the professional,
yeah,
and still making sure that we are pushing ourselves and making art. Because it's hard to go into the opposite end when you're like, I've just been printing up flyers and updating my website, and I can't remember the last time I was inspired or took a class or, you know, did a performance that wasn't kind of like on autopilot. And, you know, I think also you do hit a place in your life. People, for the most part, people start doing comedy or their passions young, and those things kind of fall away for the rest of the world,
right,
you know, to kind of come in there. And I think we are at a place right now, which is, how do we make this a career? How do you make this into the thing that, you know, provides you with money, provides you with support? And it's never easy, because there's always extra steps that need to be taken. But, you know, that is a new learning process all in its own. You know, the business side of it is, it's very nice of you to say that I'm good at the business side of it. But I think for me, there's a steep learning curve there as well. And I mean, I'm lucky, because Improv Asylum is, and they are very proudly, a business. You know, they're definitely a theater, but they also, they, you know, dress it up in suits. So, you know, there's kind of a corporate feel to it. There's a show feel to it. And I think that, you know, has kind of been a lesson to me of, like, you know, if you want to make money off of it, or if you want to try and make it a career, you have to take it seriously. And that side of it especially. So dress up, look nice, put on a good show.
Yeah, and he made, you know, he says that the learning curve is steep, and I mean, it's very steep for,
yeah,
me. So I guess maybe the visual metaphor would be, like, you know, he's just a little higher on the peak, and his hand is out and helping me up. You know, like, that's how I feel. I definitely feel it.
Yeah.
Like,
and both
that
of us don't realize, but we've run out of oxygen.
we're
about to,
yeah,
die.
But also, like, I do the work on stand-up shows, and that is super fulfilling, because that is, like, really visceral and really, like, when, especially when I'm doing it, work with a beatboxer, I can get very into the musician aspect of art and what I like to do. And then like the visceral crowd work and stuff like that. And it's so easy to do it, like, because you can just pop onto a set and do 10 minutes. It's not an hour show that you book with your partner, you know? So I feel really artistically fulfilled in my career right now. I feel as though my face is against the ceiling waiting to get into the next level. I feel like I'm so like, to right, I can feel that there's a next step on the horizon that I don't really know yet. Yet what that is.
And everybody feels that way too, I think. You know, I think it's funny because you always meet somebody who's like, especially again, the Improv Asylum structure, power structure. You know, people are like, gotta get on house teams.
That was my first thing that I was like, that was my first goal. Like, I need to make house teams. And, like, I made it. I didn't make it this last run. Which, whatever, you know, I'll get there again.
Well, but the thing that's interesting is I think everybody always feels like their face is pushed up against the glass. And part of it is you don't realize that you can kind of step back and, like, look around. And, you know, sometimes you just got to make that your own thing. And there's a lot of different pieces of pie and there's a lot of avenues to take.
Yeah, I do.
That feeling of having your face pushed against the glass, that never goes away.
That's one of the reasons I can justify, like, not making house teams is, like, I run a ton of indie shows and stuff like that, and I just make my own opportunities, and I get as much stage time as I want because you just create your own stage time.
Right, and I think sometimes, too, those feelings, the having something that is yours is a very powerful thing. I mean, it just is. Like, it feels good. And it's scary because it's your name on it.
Yeah.
You know, if we had a bad show here, I was like, well, it's Improv Asylum. They don't know who I am. Whatever. I'm just a lanky guy who, you know, had a bad show. But if we have a bad show now, which we never do, and never have and never will, you know, it's Your Love Our Musical, and it's Rebecca and Evan present Your Love Our Musical. So our names are in the title, which is funny.
My improv group runs a show in Quincy, Mass, once a month, and it just got derailed by a drunk guy. It's at a bar. And
yeah.
I mean, it literally got derailed. He shut down our whole set. Like, he wouldn't let us talk.
Yeah.
And he was offended by everything. And it felt like I felt like I got punked, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't like that, you know. And it was embarrassing. And I'm like, this is not anything I want to have associated with me, like, this type of show. So when that type of stuff happens, you've got to, like, look at it after it happens and be like, all right, how could we have prevented this? And, like, just figure out a way to prevent that from happening.
No, tell you, that kind of stuff totally strengthens you as an artist because that, you know, like, you've seen some shit now.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you guys have? I know you probably got to run. What do you guys have coming up for shows? Do you want to promote?
Well, we have our Soho run.
Mm-hmm.
That's the big one. That's mainly probably what we're both mainly focused on.
When does that occur?
So we have 5 shows. The first one's actually on Monday, September 14th. And we're doing 3 shows on Mondays, September 14th, 21st, and the 28th. And then we have a show October 1st and a show October 16th. So we have these 5 shows at the Soho Playhouse in New York City. And you know, you can go online and see yourloveourmusical.com, and we have them all listed there. And after that, we're kind of going to reassess and see, you know, how those shows went, and we're probably going to find a theater. We've been doing a monthly show at the Pit. We're going to maybe start that back up again, but we're in an interesting phase right now because basically we have these 5 shows to sell, and then we'll just kind of see, you know, who knows where they will put us or what will happen.
Yeah, because you never know who's in the crowd and what kind of opportunity could present itself or you hope for that anyway.
This fringe run has been, you know, like money and time, and we've really kind of stepped outside what we usually do to produce our show. And so I think we're going to, like, step back and take a look and see how that process was and kind of see where we're at and then, you know, write up some new goals and go from there.
Nice. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks a lot, guys. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, man. I had a great time.
Yeah. Thank you. All right. And thanks for listening. Bye.